I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. The Florida House packed up early. They said they couldn't work through a stalemate with the Senate over healthcare funding. A special session is likely, as the two chambers were unable to pass a budget during the regular 60-day session. The collapse of the regular session took down some big bills with it, like water conservation, and left other legislation, like Medicaid expansion, in limbo. To talk more about what made it and what didn't, I'll speak with 90.7 reporters Amy Green and Abe Abaraya. And later in the program, University of Central Florida political scientist Aubrey Jewett joins me to discuss the special session process and how the two chambers will negotiate Florida's budget. A legislature in limbo, that's ahead on Intersection. The Florida legislature has to pass just one bill each year, a budget, and this year the session ended without one. And the biggest issue in that budget was healthcare. Here to talk about what did and what didn't happen is 90.7's health reporter Abe Abaraya. Welcome, Abe.
Happy to be here.
So this has been a bit of a rollercoaster session for healthcare, but let's start with a little context. Many of the issues the legislature is dealing with involved healthcare for the poor. Now, where does Florida sit nationally on these issues?
So 19% of Floridians don't have health insurance. It's one of the highest percentages in the country, and it's the root cause for many of these political issues.
And one of those issues is the low income pool, or LIP. This is a $2.2 billion fund, which includes both federal and state money, and it helps pay for health care for the uninsured. So what's going on with LIP?
So LIP money mostly goes to hospitals, but also to health clinics and doctor education. It reimburses hospitals for providing health care to Floridians who don't have insurance after they get the care. Now, without a negotiated deal, this LIP money runs out July 1st.
Okay, so how is this going to affect patients?
Well, it's a really good question, and frankly, it's one that's hard to answer. But I can tell you I did speak with Maria McCorkle. She's a law student. She has two children with a rare neuromuscular disease, and they're being treated by a specialist at Nemours in Orlando. And she spoke at a recent public hearing because she's worried that the loss of these LIP monies could actually impact her ability to access specialists.
I have met many parents in this journey who have children who have serious diseases and serious illnesses, and that somebody has to be able to say that these are not numbers in an Excel and these are not words in an amendment. These are lives. These are children that are not to be used in political games.
Okay, so locally, the LIP fund is worth $165 million to local hospitals, Orlando Health, Florida Hospital, and Nemours. What are they going to do without the money?
Well, no one locally is saying that they're going to have to shut down facilities or close down entire service lines if a LIP deal isn't reached, but they are saying that it would be harder to get to a specialist, for example. But other hospitals in the state are saying they would shut down without the money. And Florida is kind of prepping this new proposal to ask the federal government to continue LIP, saying that even if Florida expanded Medicaid, there would still be $1.6 billion in healthcare costs for the poor. Now, keep in mind, that is a lot of money, but it would be down significantly from the nearly $5 billion in costs it costs Florida right now.
It also should be noted that the Urban Institute's come out and said that the $1.6 billion figure includes more than just hospital care. So House Republicans pointing to LIP expiring say, well, if the federal government can't be trusted to continue the LIP program, we can't trust them to continue funding Medicaid either.
Yeah, that's the argument against expanding Medicaid. The other argument is that Medicaid is a broken system with poor outcomes, and that if you expand it, it'll eat up other priorities in Florida's budget.
So, Abe, LIP is just one piece of this budget showdown. Medicaid is the other part of it. How are these two linked?
Well, House Republicans would say that the two aren't linked and that the federal government should continue to fund LIP at its current levels. But federal officials, they don't want LIP money to pay for Floridians who would have been covered with an expansion of Medicaid. So keep in mind, expanding Medicaid is one way Obamacare originally expected to expand access. And they don't want to pay for that health care twice. But they have hinted that LIP could continue maybe as kind of a bridge.
And in amongst all of this, the governor is also suing the federal government.
Absolutely. Rick Scott and Pam Bondi have filed a lawsuit against the federal government. When the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Obamacare was constitutional, they did say the federal government can't mandate Medicaid expansion with a, quote, gun-to-the-head approach. The law basically said states who didn't expand Medicaid would lose their Medicaid funding. Rick Scott's current lawsuit says this issue, tying LIP dollars to Medicaid, is doing exactly that. It's forcing Florida to expand Medicaid with a gun to its head.
Okay, so what are Senate Republicans like the Senate leader Andy Gardner planning?
Well, they want to do both. They want to get an extension to LIP and expand Medicaid. Like every good piece of legislation, it's got an acronym. This one's called FIX. And it would operate by drawing down those federal Medicaid dollars and using them to subsidize private insurance for Floridians. It would have features like co-pays and work requirements.
There were some other healthcare bills that failed this session as well. What were they?
Notably, much-needed clarifications on a low-THC medical marijuana bill that passed in 2014 and has been plagued with lawsuits. This bill would allow patients in Florida to get non-euphoric medical marijuana. The Department of Health has been sued over how it wants to implement the law, and there's potentially a lot of money at stake here. Many people were hoping the Florida legislature would weigh in and clean up the law and provide some guidance, but that bill failed. Ben Pallera is spokesman for medical marijuana advocacy group United for Care. He told Florida Public Radio in Tallahassee that they're hoping to get medical marijuana on the ballot again in 2016 after a narrow defeat last year.
We want, you know, Floridians who are sick and suffering to get relief. And Charlotte's Web certainly needed some fixes, and it could certainly use expansion.
So that's Ben Pallera from United for Care. What about some other bills that failed the session?
Well, oversight for Florida prisons, which have been racked with controversy over increased inmate deaths since a private company took over the management. Miami Herald has been investigating these deaths in the system. Also, the same-sex bathroom bill, which the LGBT community was criticizing as being anti-transgender, also failed.
And on a more productive note, what passed?
Well, Florida's now the 16th state to allow terminally ill patients to try experimental drugs if other drugs aren't effective. And a bill to expand access to a drug reversing heroin and pain pill overdosing has passed as well. And as you and I have talked about before, heroin's overtaking cocaine as the deadliest street drug in Orange and Osceola counties. So that should be some welcome news here on the home front.
Abe Abariah's 90.7's health reporter. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
One thing everyone was watching during this legislative session was how lawmakers would spend Amendment 1 funding. Amendment 1 is the state constitutional amendment which initiated a 20-year, $22 billion land and water conservation effort. 75% of voters approved the amendment back in November. We're joined now by 90.7's Amy Green. Amy, what happened here?
Well, that's right, Matt. The amendment is aimed at land acquisition and conservation, but it directs the legislature to allocate the funding. And that's why so many people were watching this so closely, especially given how many voters supported the amendment in November. The funding will be part of the state budget. And so the issue was put on hold along with so many others when the House adjourned abruptly early last week. Environmentalists were unhappy about how things were heading. They said lawmakers wanted to spend the money in ways the amendment never intended, like state agency operations. But many state lawmakers, including Governor Rick Scott, say they would rather focus on managing existing state-owned land rather than buying new. I talked with State Senator David Simmons of Altamont Springs, and he says Amendment 1 funding should go toward addressing Florida's biggest environmental problem first, and that's its ailing waterways.
It is not only important to follow the letter of Amendment 1 in its implementation, but also the spirit. And so what we've got to do is remember, what was the goal of Amendment 1? It is to clean up our environment and ensure that that is preserved for not only ourselves, but for our children and our children's children.
That was State Senator David Simmons of Altamont Springs, and he says the most important thing when it comes to Florida's waterways is addressing the pollution. And he says Amendment 1 funding should be used to address that problem.
Well, Amy, environmentalists also were pushing lawmakers to buy about 46,000 acres of U.S. sugar land south of Lake Okeechobee. Will they do it now?
The short answer is probably not, Matt. The land was part of a deal former Governor Charlie Crist struck with U.S. Sugar in 2008. Crist had wanted to buy out U.S. Sugar and put that land toward Everglades conservation. The deal was downsized during the recession, but the state retained an option on the land, and the option expires in October. And so environmentalists were pushing lawmakers to use Amendment 1 funding to buy the land now. They want to build a reservoir there. But again, many lawmakers say they want to focus on managing existing state-owned land rather than buying new. Current budget proposals include no money for this.
And we heard State Senator David Simmons talking about the importance of water, and obviously water policy was a legislative priority too for House Speaker Steve Crisafulli. What happened there?
Nothing. The House passed a water bill soon after the start of the legislative session, and the Senate approved one last week. But the bills are conflicting, and so they died, along with so many others, when the House adjourned early. It's the second consecutive year lawmakers have prioritized Florida's ailing waterways only to agree to nothing. Simmons told me he plans to raise the issue again during a special session, but I think most people expect lawmakers will wait until next year.
Okay, so moving on from water, what about fracking?
Yeah, that's another issue that died when the House adjourned early. Fracking is legal in Florida. Some people wanted to ban it. Others wanted to put heavy regulations on it. But in the end, nothing was agreed on.
Okay, so that's some of the environmental legislation that didn't make it through this session. What about things that did make it through?
Yes. Eric Draper of Audubon of Florida tells me there was one.
The only environmental bill that passed had to do with growth management, and in the end, it wasn't a terrible bill, wasn't particularly a newer or needed bill. But the things that people were most concerned about, things like fracking and this big water policy, cleaning up the Everglades, nothing really got done on that.
That was Eric Draper of Audubon of Florida. He says it was an unproductive legislative session when it comes to the environment.
Okay, so Amy, what does this all mean to Central Floridians?
Statewide, Florida's waterways are in trouble. They're polluted and overtapped. In Central Florida, existing sources for drinking water are projected to reach their limit in a few decades. Again, Eric Draper of Audubon of Florida.
Our springs and Lake Okeechobee and our coastal estuaries are experiencing these toxic algae blooms. That there's not enough water going into the natural systems to support the birds and fish and wildlife and places for people to swim. I mean, we've got a crisis on water in the state of Florida, and the legislature's done nothing.
That was strong words from Eric Draper of Audubon of Florida.
Okay, so given those strong words, given where environmentalists are thinking at this point, what are lawmakers, if anything, expected to take up as far as environmental measures go during a special session?
Because Amendment 1 funding is part of the state budget, that is something that likely will come up during a special session. But I think most people expect lawmakers will wait until next year to bring up the other issues.
Amy Green is a reporter with 90.7 News. Thanks for joining us, Amy.
Anytime, Matt. Thanks.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. The conversation about the end of the regular legislative session continues after the break. Join us online at wmfe.org/intersection or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. Joining me by phone is Aubrey Jewett. He's a political science professor at the University of Central Florida. Professor Jewett, welcome back to Intersection.
Thanks for having me on, Matt.
Well, the 60-day legislative session is over. It ended a few days earlier for the Florida House after they called the end of the session last week. The Tampa Bay Times published an editorial on Friday in which they said the legislature is broken. Here's a quote from that article. The system is rigged to benefit the most partisan lawmakers from both political parties, protect incumbents, and amplify the voices of lobbyists and large campaign contributors. And then they go on to list a number of ways they say the system could be fixed. But Aubrey Jewett, what do you think? Is the system broken, or is this just the sign of healthy democracy? I mean, they're looking at a special session. This is the way it's supposed to work, right?
Right. Well, I think you could say it's broken in the sense that it didn't work very well this session. The legislature really only has one constitutional obligation when they meet in session each year for 60 days, and that's to pass a budget. And, you know, they didn't do it. And it became clear about 30 days into the session that it probably wasn't going to happen. And, of course, we had the House actually adjourned 3 days early, unconstitutionally, as it turns out, according to the Florida Supreme Court. So, yeah, I mean, I think the system broke. I don't think overall the system's broken. I mean, democracy does work in Florida. But what you had here was a very conservative House going up against a more moderate Senate. and the big issue of health care coverage, they just couldn't agree on. And Obamacare, once again, national politics and Obamacare sort of intruded into the state politics here.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you say, Aubrey Jewett, the general disagreement between the two chambers was over healthcare funding, and it was a pretty big difference. We talked about this earlier in the session, $4 billion gap, almost $5 billion. And this is what Senate President Andy Gardner had to say about that discussion.
We have the discussion, and if people are not interested in the proposal that the Senate has put forward, which is a lot of people want to say, well, it's straight up Medicaid expansion. It's really not. It's actually a free market approach to addressing some of these issues that are coming up. And what we have said, if people are not supportive of that, put something on the table that you are supportive of. You know, let's start talking about ideas about the uninsured problem here in the state of Florida.
So Senate President Andy Gardner saying, really bring your idea to the table and let's talk about it. And of course, in the final days last week, we did hear some signs from the House, the Florida House, that they're ready to start talking. So some positive signs of maybe a bit of a thaw there, at least some cracks in the ice. Aubrey, what do you think? Do you think the House can come up with something that the Senate will find palatable?
Well, you know, that is the big question, and it's hard to say. I think in the end they will come up with a budget. Whether it includes any sort of Medicaid expansion or just more generally expansion of health care coverage options for the working poor, you know, I don't know. It's really an unknowable because we just don't know how dug in both sides are. I think it was, as you point out, a good sign, sort of a little thaw in the relationship when the Senate president suggested a 20-day session in June and basically said, hey, let's wait till then we can find out some of the answers that we need from the federal government about the $1 billion that they may or may not send us for the low-income pool that helps or that has helped provide coverage, health coverage for low-income Floridians. And he said, you know, right now we've heard mixed messages. Are they going to discontinue that program? Are they going to send the money? So let's wait and find out, and then we'll at least have more information. And the House Speaker, Steve Christopher, he basically said, yeah, that sounds like a reasonable idea. At least let's wait and see. He hasn't responded 100% yet to saying, yes, let's have this exact special session in June. But it seems as if they're at least, you know, the tempers maybe are going down a little bit, and maybe they can at least start talking to each other.
Mm-hmm. If there is a question mark over whether that $1 billion is coming Florida's way or not, these are problems which the House has rightly said we need to sort this out. There is an issue here, and we've got to fix it.
Well, yeah, I mean, my personal take on it is that I think the House was on pretty solid ground as far as being conservative financially and maybe with a small c conservative, meaning, you know, we don't want to pledge to spend money that we don't know that we're getting. And the federal government pretty much said, you know, we're not going to keep this low-income pool funding around because we had hoped to replace it with Obamacare. We thought more states would do it, and so we view Obamacare as a cheaper way to provide the health coverage than this low-income pool that we've been doing. You know, conversely, you know, on the Senate side, I think that their idea, whether you agree with Obamacare or not, but their idea and the Senate president's idea of trying to set up health purchasing options for the working poor in Florida so that they don't have to go on Medicaid, because that was one of the sore points for the House, as they argue that, hey, Medicaid is a terrible program, and health outcomes under Medicaid are actually worse, according to some studies, and for people that don't have any insurance at all, and this kind of thing. And, you know, the Senate president said, well, look, I'm not saying to expand Medicaid. I'm saying let's have some support for the working poor to buy health insurance. So I think both sides, you know, have some reasonable proposals and reasonable concerns, but the big problem over the last 30 days was that they were just really talking past each other and just sort of yelling at each other, and the ideology just sort of came in between it again. You know, from the House perspective, anything that smacks of supporting President Obama's health care, you know, Obamacare, they just are not going to do that. And mm-hmm. this, from the Senate side, they're not quite as tied up, you know, in what the name of the program is or something else. They just want to see more health care options expanded for the working poor who currently just don't have it.
Mm-hmm. Although, as you say, Senate President Andy Gardner quite careful there to say that we're not expanding Medicaid. This is the free market, really stressing that point. What happens if they can't come to an agreement over this? What happens to that federal money? What happens to that pool of working poor, as you call them?
Right. Well, you know, if they don't come to an agreement, then pretty much we see the status quo as far as the working poor. I mean, they're just, for now, are not going to have any extra health insurance options. Basically, if they can't figure out a way to scrape up enough money to buy it on the exchanges that are already set up, then they're not going to get it because they don't qualify for Medicaid. They make too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough to really have the disposable income to buy health insurance. So they're just going to be out of luck. As far as the low-income pool, basically, you know, if the feds decide they're not sending the money, then they're not sending the money. And that's an additional problem because not only will that hit the budget of a lot of hospitals around the state, it may force them to raise rates on people who are insured in order to cover the uninsured who show up at their doorstep and who they are legally required to cover if they come in the emergency room.
Mm-hmm. If I could turn now to Governor Rick Scott, what kind of influence does he wield over this special session?
Well, it depends. There's two ways to call a special session in Florida. The governor can call one and require the legislature to come back in. And if the governor calls one, he's got to lay out specifically what he wants them to cover. And then actually, legally, that's all that they can talk about. The other way to do it, and probably more likely what's going to happen this time around, is the Senate President and the House Speaker can jointly call a special session together. And if they do that, then obviously the main topic is the budget, but then that also opens it up more easily to cover a number of other issues which were left on the table and were sort of casualties of the budget wars. Basically, some of the main priorities of the Senate were held up in the House, and some of the main priorities of the House were held up in the Senate because neither side wanted to give the other side what they wanted. They wanted to hold bargaining chips so that they could, you know, use those to help solve the budget problem. But when mm-hmm. the budget crisis just disintegrated, a lot of other legislation went down the tubes as well. So bottom line is, if the House Speaker and the Senate President call this 20-day session that maybe has been proposed, then they can cover a lot of other issues beside the budget. So some other worthwhile projects may be revisited.
Mm-hmm. And the obituaries have been written for a lot of those bills, but lobbyists must also be kind of frantically scrambling around to see what they can do with their bills, if there's still some hope, how they can get that into the discussion, whatever it may be, in that special session.
Yes. If the legislature calls the special session themselves, then they can open it up to lots of different issues. Bills can be refiled. Amendments can be filed to bills that are already in play. And so a lot of things that looked like they had no hope of passing this year, you know, still could be revived.
What have governors done in the past in Florida in handling disputes over the budget?
Well, budgets are always contentious, but I will say that this is one of the more contentious, or if not the most contentious that I can think of in some time, you know, in the last 20 years. We've had some difficult budgets. Usually difficult budgets occur when the economy is tanking. So, for instance, back in 2007, 2008, you know, there were some difficult decisions to be made because tax revenues were falling dramatically because the economy was hurting. And, you know, when you have to make cuts in the budget, that usually is much more difficult. And so this is even more surprising in the sense that we're in a decently strong economy. Tax revenues have grown as the economy has grown in Florida. And so they had more money to spend this year than last year, but they, couldn't come to an agreement. Basically, governors have a fine line to walk. On the one hand, they certainly have a role in the budget. They propose one to start off. They tried to lobby for their favorite programs. And in the end, they sign the budget or not, and they can line item veto objectionable spending. So they certainly have a role, but they have to be careful. You know, sometimes the legislature, especially if you're the branch that feels that progress is not being made, and if the governor got involved, he might help your side, then, you know, you call for the governor to get involved. But the governor sometimes has to worry about stepping on the legislator's toes because, you know, the legislature itself feels that they're, you know, they have a constitutionally independent role for the budget, and so the governor has a role too, but they say basically, governor, you know, you need to stay out of this and let us figure it out. So it's a difficult decision, it's a difficult position that the governor is in when the legislature itself between the House and Senate can't get along. It's a little bit different if it's just between two parties, and, you know, obviously then the governor will usually weigh in on his party's side. But, you know, one of the crazy things about this is that both the House and the Senate are controlled by big margins by Republicans, and the governor's Republican too. So, you know, how does he get involved without hurting or alienating feelings? It's difficult. Mm-hmm. Plus, in this case, I would add that, you know, from the Senate perspective, they probably figure that the governor's backed off his idea of, that he mentioned a couple of years ago, that he would support an expansion of Medicaid and under Obamacare, and he doesn't seem to be supporting that anymore. So maybe the House would like to get him involved, but not the Senate.
One more thing that may be a casualty or not of this session, $600 million in tax cuts. What do you think about that, Aubrey Jewett? Do you think some of those tax cuts might come back to the table in a special session?
I think it is a very strong possibility that once the House and Senate get serious and figure out this budget, that we are going to see some tax cuts, because we are, again, talking about a Republican-controlled legislature, and really almost every year that Republicans have been in charge since the late 90s, going back to the Jeb Bush year of 98, when that was the first time we had unified Republican control of the state legislature and the governor of the state, we have seen tax cuts almost every year. You know, the only exceptions have been, again, a couple bad budget years when the economy was really tanking and thus tax collections were lower, and they just didn't, you know, they couldn't cut taxes anymore because they had to fund essential services. So I think there's a high probability that we're going to see some tax cuts come out of this yet.
Aubrey Jewett is a political science professor at the University of Central Florida. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Matt. Good to be on.
The conversation continues online at wmfe.org/intersection, where you can sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.